Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Who you got on the Super Bowl, guys?
I got Chiefs.
Sean, I know you got a lot of money on this game. Where are you putting it?
I'll put it on the other team. Who are they?
Out of paper, out of stock. There's friendly faces around the block. Break loose from the chains that are causing you pain. Call Michael and Stanley, Jim and Dwight Creed, call Andy and Kelly for your business paper needs. Or Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people. Dunder Mifflin, the people versus paper people.
Hello and welcome to the Michael Scott Podcast Company, a show for fans of The Office by fans of The Office. I'm your host and your number two guy, Sean Roney.
And I'm Edwin James, delegate from Iceland.
And with us, as always, our producer in the warehouse, Mr. Alex Ward.
Oh, no! Oh, Mr. Bill! Oh, SNL, when they pull him apart, he would always get rolled over by something. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Every week we get together and talk about our favorite show, NBC's The Office. This week, once we cover our main topic, we're going to have a little conference room talk about the new Brian Baumgartner podcast that's going to be coming out. We're talking about this John Krasinski SNL sketch that happened recently and a couple other things. But today's main topic
is... We have a new segment
is,
we're introducing, Sean.
A new segment that we'll be introducing, yes.
Stick around for that.
Ordinary things. This week's main topic is Office Olympics, season 2, episode 3, directed by Paul Feig, written by Michael Schur. I feel like we haven't said those guys' names in a while.
Feig and Schur. That was the delegate from Iceland. Lars Feig and Schur.
Commissioner of Flonkerton.
And it aired October 4th, 2005. Mm. This is one of my favorite episodes of all time. I think same goes for you guys.
No. I don't love Office Olympics. I'm going to come out of the gate and tell you. It's great. It's good.
Whoa.
It's good.
All right.
It's we'll a get good into it. Well, episode.
I really like Office Olympics. I think.
Oh, wow.
In some of our, what a hot take. In some of our single episode focused episodes of this podcast, we have focused a little bit on the later seasons in recent weeks and months. And we wanted to spend a little bit of time talking about one from earlier on in the show. And I think this is a great example. We get the first cold open. We get some really great Michael and Dwight. We also get the Office Ensemble without Michael in the room. So it's a pretty unique episode.
I want to be clear. I'm not saying I don't like Office Olympics. I really like this episode. I don't love it the way I love other episodes. That's
you don't like it. I understand.
I don't like it. I like it. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Office Olympics. The first appearance of Moe's, played by Michael Schur, who wrote this episode.
Via photograph.
Via photograph. That's all we get.
Not Shroot Farms. or at least not what taste. It ends up being.
But yeah, like Edwin was saying, this is an earlier episode, so it's really nice to return to early Office. It's my favorite time in the Office series. You get things like everyone is bored. That doesn't really happen in seasons 7, 8, and 9, just because there's so many story arcs and so much drama always going on. That there's never a dull moment in the later seasons. But the whole motivation for Office Olympics is that Jim dies of boredom and Pam needs to rescue him. So
he also goes on a tour of the office, finding what everyone does when they're bored, which is a nice little way to set the whole thing up is sort of starts getting ideas from everyone. Everyone has their own little way of coping with the day to day at their desk.
Yeah. That's very true. That is one of the first kind of office tours that we get is Jim going to the different apartments and getting to see everyone kind of in their element. I think to go off your point, Sean, the way you said it made it sound like you're so excited to see boredom on screen. Oh, finally, boredom. This is what I've been looking for.
Banal,
but I do agree that I do agree that the early first couple scenes of The Office, there's a lot of moments where The Office breathes. You hear the copier, that those office Zen sounds for referencing that Peacock channel. A lot of that comes in the early seasons where some of the little moments don't necessarily push the plot along to the same extent that they do later on in the show, where it's so congested with so many characters and trying to, you know, you've got C and D and E storylines in some episodes. So it is nice to have to let the episode breathe a little bit.
Yeah. And this one is just, it is page flipping back and forth of Michael buying a condo, The Office dealing with their boredom. It's very simple, very straightforward.
We've gotten a question before that was like, what if you could spend a day in the office, what episode would you pick to spend a day in the office? I think this would be a great day to spend a day in the office. There's no
no Michael. It's not,
yeah, there's no Michael. But yeah, everyone's just having fun and you get to go all around the whole office. It's too bad they didn't go down to the warehouse. Might have been a fun one to see.
Heck of a venue.
What games they play down there.
For the games, yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah. You know they do.
I'll take the basketball.
Yeah, what kind of games do you think they have down in the warehouse? Basketball, that would be it.
Basketball, that's the day I would want to be at the office just to play some moves.
And napping. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's so many types of games. I feel like there's something you could do with that big fan. Like you like try and you try and blow something into a target, you know, like you throw
hey,
it
Daryl,
up.
You ever do this?
Oh, and before we get into the plot of this episode too much, some fun facts about this episode are that Office Olympics, the idea for this episode was born, came from King of the Hill. In the writing offices for King of the Hill, or the production offices, they would have Office Olympics.
Oh, interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of King of the Hill writers
involved. Paul Lieberstein and King of the Hill, man, such a great show.
I just started going back and watching it for the first time ever. I love it. Oh, my God. Yeah, it's so great. Good. The introduction of Moe's in this episode. Moe's is based off of a real guy named Moe's from Amish in the City. I'm sure we've mentioned that before.
We have talked about this.
Yeah. But I did go and watch at least one clip on YouTube of him going into the ocean for the first time ever and almost drowning.
I know we covered this. We covered this territory before. I'm amazed that that's the inspiration because I actually kind of remember watching that show when it was on TV.
It looks like a fun show. It looks like one that would be fun to go back and watch. I wonder if they were real fans of it and they all watched it or what.
Mm-hmm. In addition to the introduction of Moe's, it's also the first mention of Shute Farms.
Yes.
Yeah, we hear Dwight describe it in little pieces while Michael's buying his condo, you know, and the way he wants to get out of at Michael asking him to be his roommate is like, I live in a nine bedroom farmhouse. I have my own crossbow range. It's perfect for me. The two bathrooms would be nice. We only have the one under the porch. Nine bedrooms, one bath. Tough place to stay if you're a guest at Shute Farms.
Sean, do you have any other fun facts or should we jump into Michael and Dwight?
I think let's jump in.
I do really love that you get Michael and Dwight kind of off on their own for this one. And Dwight is really enjoying his time with Michael. And Michael goes through so much in trying to decide whether or not he wants to sign these papers. I do love Dwight walking around and inspecting the property. That's such a fun side of Dwight.
We get to see it again in Cocktails, this sort of habit he has. And it's sort of like I have a shout out to my friend, my friend Winslow, I know he listens to the show, but he was very much that role for me when I like bought my first car. I was like, Winslow, can you just come with me? Because you know about cars and you're going to ask the right questions and I don't know what I'm doing. And ultimately, it's ended up saving me some money because Winslow was able to go, the clutch is about to burn out on this car you're going to buy. You should ask for $500 off so you can replace the clutch. And that's exactly what happened after owning the car for about 2 months. So,
wow.
Sometimes it's nice to have a representative like Dwight is here. So shout out to Winslow. What's up, man?
Yeah, I don't know if Dwight, though, is the right guy to bring along. My goodness. Just heart.
It could go very wrong.
Although Dwight will shoot you straight. He won't sugarcoot anything that he sees. Hey, look, no. Carpenter ants.
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna be paying this off in your 70s. He doesn't help Michael out making him feel better. But you're right, Edwin. You don't want that sometimes.
I love a moment with Dwight as where they're telling Michael that the neighborhood is gay friendly, and Michael's like, oh, that's good, and he hasn't quite figured out why they're telling him this yet, and then Dwight just leans in, let's check out the master bedroom, and you can see Michael figures it out. These walls are paper thin.
Okay, go ahead.
In the rain, and then so he says the paper thin, and we hear someone practicing like bass or cello next door, mm-hmm. right? Honestly, in the scale of instruments that a next door neighbor is practicing, cello's not a terrible one if you had to pick. Mm-mm. Much better than trumpet or clarinet or something screechier. Have you guys ever had someone who plays an instrument next door? Or that's not good at an instrument next door?
See, I was going to say, at our old apartment, the guy who lived across from us played trumpet, and he played it beautifully.
Oh, that's nice.
It was always cool. Thank God. It was great.
Thank God.
Mm-hmm. I used to hear singing from one of my upstairs neighbors that I don't think lives in my building anymore, but that was pretty nice. They were good at singing.
Oh, that's good. these are all very nice.
Yeah.
I would almost be more worried about the dad who's like, I don't hear you practicing.
That's worse. You're right.
That guy's going to get annoying.
You're right. That's worse.
I do love, too, that Dwight is concerned about not being seen with Michael. So he has to take down the top. He puts on his Terminator sunglasses. Like, I love that Dwight is really enjoying this time with Michael.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll talk about this later, too, that Alex and I both recently bought our own places, but the idea that Michael doesn't know which condo is his is also very worrisome.
A lot of alarming.
He really hasn't thought about this enough.
He doesn't know exactly which one's his. He's not clear on the terms of the agreement as far as the length of his mortgage. Mm-hmm. None of this is surprising, by the way. Michael Scott, again, inattention. Right. And attention, detail, impulsivity. These are his hallmarks.
Right.
When you see the street he's on and the row of condos, it was a nice little stroke by the writers. Because I'm guessing when they started writing this episode, it was like, Michael buys a house. And it was like, no, Michael buys a condo. There's just something about it being a condo that makes a little more sense for Michael Scott. Because he's still like, and he is. I mean, he is a homeowner. That's what owning a condo is. But he just like... Clearly, I don't think he put much thought into this. He just decided to buy.
There's something about the condo that's like a reasonable, purchase. But you know that Michael has these romantic fantasies about it, that he's going to be like a grandpa, like pushing his grandkid on a swing.
His grandkids are going to learn to walk. Right there.
It's like, this is not the place for that.
No, not at all.
This episode is such an episode of firsts. I think this is a good example of Michael's. We see Michael's poor decision making, and train of thought or lack thereof in a lot of the early episodes of The Office, but we don't necessarily see it in his personal life until we get to a moment like this. And even in the Dundies, which is just a couple episodes prior, he's still with everyone from the office at what is kind of a corporate event. So to see him. Bring it into his personal life is kind of a first, because we see that a lot later on. I think, too, this is one of the first that we get where Michael is sitting at his desk talking to the camera and Dwight is standing behind him, diversifying, smart, being kind of the enforcer role, that number two, right behind Michael over his shoulder, which is such a classic sort of framing within the office.
There's that great when they're getting ready to leave and like Dwight's like, can I come with you, please? Like, and he's like handing him his cell phone. And
you touched on that, Edwin, about like this first outing that they have. And you're right that up through the show until this point, I mean, the only times we've seen like Michael and Dwight doing so, like in basketball, like Michael's chastising everyone in season one. when he makes Dwight, you know, pick like the healthcare, all this stuff. And then in the Dundies, he's just, again, chastising Dwight for not being a good host with him. And he's very hard on Dwight. And you're right that in this time, when we see them out and about, Dwight is just relishing the fact that they're friends, they're buddies, you know, let's put the top down, all this sort of stuff that keeps playing out through season two. And one of the best parts of season two is it's still that young part of the relationship between Dwight and Michael, where it's still very much a boss and a worker, but they think they're both think they're friends.
Hey, check it out. Terminator. Yeah. I do not know what you spend your money on.
Yeah, that's a weird. The way that Dwight kind of sneaks the sunglasses on after he puts the top down, and the way he puts the glasses on, or like he's been thinking about this for quite a while for this moment to happen. Very funny.
I do love too when Michael he offers Dwight the opportunity to live in the condo. There's that dynamic of Michael not wanting Dwight around until he needs him. And then he realizes that he really needs him. And then when Dwight does something to rub him the wrong way, you know, offer revoked. He makes that noise. I'm not going to try to make it here, but he impersonates the megaphone or the foghorn so well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's he does such a good
it's
job.
It's like a shot clock buzzer.
Yeah.
It's this perfect.
Offer revoked.
And an instance of Dwight, like, who does this several times throughout the show, which is not play all the cards like that he has. Like, he kind of keeps it close to the vest and he wants to convince the other person to make the decision. It's very manipulative. He does this again in Niagara with the hotel room situation where he plays on Michael right away with the whole like, oh, I got the wrong reservation. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and this is such early Dwight, and he's so clearly, rather than just being like, no thanks, I'm good, Michael, he wants to make Michael revoke the offer because he does it. It's very like he's one step ahead
of
Michael.
Frankly,
already.
I'm relieved. Yeah.
Speaking of that, I've always wondered when Dwight says, "Actually," and I had spoken to Teresa about a room with two safes. I always wondered what both safes were for.
I know. What is he
weapons,
going to?
Probably.
What is he going
at
to
least one.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
I also love too, speaking of not playing all those cards, when they're talking about the terrarium and Michael says it's an aquarium. Dwight kind of like looks back at the camera. I do love that where he's, yeah, sure, Michael.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
And then the large collection of armoires.
Yes, yes, which are basically wardrobes. Is it just a fancy way of saying wardrobe?
Like, yeah, I think so.
What's the difference? But he inherited them from his grandparents. It's a weird, like, well, how many of these do you have? Why?
It is so great to see, like, how in one episode when you see them both thinking the other is stupid and needs the other one, you know, like... Yep. It just makes you think of like all those times that Dwight is just trying to give Michael good advice. Michael, look at, don't stand directly under the icicles when you look at them.
A perfect comedy duo.
He does it in Survivor Man with Michael again, where he's just kind of playing one step ahead. He even does it without Michael. He does it with Pam with the building codes. You know, with getting her to come to him and say, hey, you're in violation. He's very good at this. And this is the first example we really see it at play.
Yeah.
And then, too, I think, unless you guys have more to say about it, I think I love how it kind of ends with the two of them sitting cross-legged in Michael's bedroom, I think, eating Subway.
Well, no, Michael's eating a burrito.
Oh, it's a burrito.
And then Dwight's eating a sandwich. So I'm like, where did they go?
Hmm.
Where did they go?
Can you imagine those poor saps back at the office today?
Cut to
speaking
nice
of
transition.
The poor saps. Yes, back at the office. Let's go back to the office Olympics. So, you know, like I said, Jim dies of boredom. Pam takes it on herself to rescue him. So she reveals that she occasionally, when she's bored, she will try to throw things into Dwight's coffee mug, which I wouldn't have thought that Pam picks on Dwight this much. Early on, right? Just throwing junk into his coffee mug. She takes a message for Dwight and gives it to Jim to crumple up and throw. But then this gives Jim the idea to go around and see what other people are doing. We learn about hate ball and accounting because Angela hates it.
He does the whole thing with Pam, but then when he goes to ask Oscar a question about expense reports, he sees the 2005 schedule. So he does that with Pam and it's whatever. And then he goes about his day and then he discovers, oh, Oscar has a thing too. oh, Kevin has a thing. Oh, Toby has a thing. And they start telling each other. And
right.
You should go ask
Toby about Dunderball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dunderball seems really boring, by the way. I don't get it. It's just, they're just really quickly throwing the ball to each other off the wall.
I think it's just, you just try and keep it going. If you can't throw it back or if you can't catch it, you lose. But, and then this inspires them to come up with entirely new games like Flunkerton. Mm-hmm. One line I didn't catch until this rewatch was Jim telling them to slide their foot into the strap, and he goes, just slide your foot right in there, right into the flunk there. Names the strap flunk.
That's good.
Within Office First, I do feel like this is the first time that we kind of get to see the ensemble together without Michael there. And I think that's pretty noteworthy, just because we get to see the characters show their personalities a little bit more. So much of The Office over the 9 seasons is the ensemble coming into its own and then becoming kind of the star of the show, especially after Michael leaves. And we really get like the first glimpses of people's personalities. We get a little bit more from Angela. We get more from Stanley, from Phyllis. I have a game. It's called Work Hard So My Children Can Go to College. It's such a perfect Stanley line.
When Phyllis comes around the door frame, when Jim's asking if anyone wants to challenge Kevin at Flunkerton,
yes.
I'll do it. The way she slyly, it's an incredible line. Incredibly delivered. It's like, you know what? There's a little more stank to Phyllis than you realized. And
yeah.
Same with Angela. Yeah,
I mean, even
keeping
Jim
a list.
Calls it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You calling me a hoe? Phyllis, coming alive. I like it.
I know. Oscar and Kevin, that they're like, oh, they're having a little more fun than we realized back there. Angela's having as much fun as we thought she was back there.
Kevin pouring the M&Ms into his mouth.
Yeah.
No one else should even try.
Yeah. I do wish Daryl had been more involved in this episode. I wish he'd come up to ask a question and gotten involved. And he could have been like, guys, come down. Like, we already got a stadium down here. You know, they could have had a whole thing going. But I digress.
Or if Creed had a game.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
100%.
Creed's game is growing mung beans.
Yeah, too. Or Meredith is how much she can drink during the day without being caught.
I think that they're racing around the office when Michael comes in. And this is when... everyone's like, oh, shoot. You know, this is when we realize, like, everyone's still just afraid of Michael.
It's
but
the
Jim
coffee
doesn't
mug
even
carry.
Yeah.
And they're running with the coffee mug.
Jim doesn't even care. He's ready to, like, keep going with this, even in front of Michael, just because this is the most fun he's ever had in the office.
And this is something that's the kind of genius of this episode and of the early Office in general is, you know, on its face, it's this episode where they're basically just different scenes of them playing games. But they do manage to lay a lot of DNA for the show in this episode and tug on sort of those larger storylines, mainly the way we see Angela talk to Pam about, you know, keeping count of how often Jim goes up, or Jim Pong, how often he goes up to
Pam
or Pam Pong, sorry, he goes up to reception throughout the day. And Pam's aware, oh, people, I'm not hiding this. Like, people can see this connection that Jim and I have. So we actually start to see that. And of course, we get just Jim's DNA of, like, he gives a crap when it's not about this. Like, of sort of this, like, the more removed from this job he is, the more happy Jim seems to be. All these things are sort of played out in really subtle ways in this episode.
I think it's important to bring up that, you know, that Angela says that she plays Pam Pong and that Pam sees Ryan throwing the medals away. Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of like, what? Like, I'm going to keep it. It's what those moments make the end of this episode that much more special, that Pam and Jim overcome those defeats and say, you know what, screw those people. We think this is fun. And so that's why I think that in terms of mushy moments in the show, the end of this episode is earned, in that, you know, when they give Michael the medal for closing on his condo, when they roll out the doves, this is actually a really sweet moment in the show.
Michael's genuinely
as
touched.
Somebody who doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
As someone who doesn't like those moments, this one gets me. I like this one.
My heart soars with the eagle's nest.
It is interesting to see Michael pulled into kind of a fun scheme to that waste time that isn't of his own creation. Mm. Because normally so much of those things are his own doing.
Something's but at happening. The
end, yeah, to be pulled in and then to be given an award is pretty cool. It's kind of a flip of the Dundies. Who's going to give Kevin the award? Dunkin' Donuts? There's a nice flip of that where Michael gets to get the gold medal. And he well, and the tears well up in his eyes. And then we have the Doves. We have the Star-Spangled Banner because Michael's from America. It's just a really nice moment.
I mean, that's the thing. Michael making this move, it's like one of his first next steps into adulthood, even though he's an adult, at least how he sees it. The first, I mean, of many, and by the time he leaves, he's completed this vision that he talks about of, you know, watching. I'm going to assume Michael has grandkids one day, but he, you know, that's what he's sitting in the street looking at his condo of like, I want a wife, I want kids, I want all these things. And by the end of the show, he has it. And this is the first thing he does is close on this condo that, you know, there's a few twists and turns along the way. Shout out to Serenity by Jan. his condo is, by the way, his condo is bigger than I realized. Like you kind of like, it looks kind of small, or this looks like he's basically bought a small apartment, but three bedrooms, gonna guess two baths, and probably.
I guess it's worth pointing out too that this is definitely not the same condo, right? The kitchen and dining room look different.
Oh, than what we see in Dinner Party.
Yeah,
and in Michael Scott Paper Company. Yeah,
Yeah,
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, true. I mean, it's like, you know, it's not the Shroot Farms we see in the picture either. They just need locations at this point. Mm-hmm. It's so funny because mm-hmm. it's just like they don't know how long the show is going to last when they're making it at this point.
Right.
They're just yeah, like, yeah. Just go.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's exactly. Yeah. Because we don't come back to this house until season 5, this condo.
Season 4
is what.
No. We see the condo later in season 2 when the trick or treaters come by.
That's true.
Ah, very good. Very good. Good catch.
Some creepy cameraman follows Michael home and films him through the door at a distance.
One other thing I wanted to mention about Jim is I feel like this version of Jim is very season 2, which he's very charismatic and he's leading the office, but he's bringing people along with him. And we see this here. We see this in The Fire. I think we don't see this as much later on, where the office kind of plays on this idea that people don't think Jim is as cool as he seems to be.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times like this, Jim is also so disconnected. He doesn't care. He's kind of flippant about the other moments. Like I'm thinking of in Beach Games, he doesn't really show the same sort of passion about having fun just in other moments. He's not nearly as engaged. And I think this version of Jim is pretty unique because it's kind of important to frame that like that's what Jim can be in terms of. And Pam says it that, you know, he gets people excited and when Jim is really engaged. But unfortunately, Jim works here, so that rarely happens. But I just think it's important to highlight this version of Jim.
Agreed.
Yes.
We still haven't done a Jim episode. That's going to be.
I know. Yeah.
Could be a two-parter.
I keep forgetting that.
We're almost 100 episodes deep. And yeah.
I know. There's a lot of characters we still have to do. Anyway, that's for another time.
Speaking of characters that we haven't talked about yet, Nancy Walls guest stars in this episode as Michael's realtor, Carol. Of course, Nancy and Steve Carell are married in real life. But it is fun to watch this episode and think about how these two are going to wind up together a little later on in the show. Just to think about how
I wouldn't date this guy.
I would not date this guy. I think that she knows she wouldn't date this guy. I mean, maybe she thinks that he's cute or something like that. But I mean, she assumes that he's gay right off the bat because he comes with Dwight. Watches him freak out over this and learns that he clearly didn't understand the terms of the contract. It just goes to show you too, like that, you know, later when she sees him at Michael's birthday party at the hockey rink and just sees that he's good with kids and stuff like that, that she's probably, you know, she's making this compromise in her mind, maybe that's like, well, maybe he's a good guy. And then how that must all come rushing back to her when she sees the photoshopped ski trip card and realizes, oh my, okay, what am I doing?
Well, he sees
he's also
go ahead.
He's also very charming in Casino Night. Pam gives him that extra runway to get that terrible introduction out of the way. So he's much more charming in that episode as well when they kind of get together.
Right. Any other thoughts on
one note from when he's closing on the condo and then when he's sort of having the crisis of like, oh my God, what am I doing? The way he sort of knocks the little plate off the stove that's clearly
yeah, the little burner
to come
thing.
Off. Yeah, the burner.
Oh God.
Is a great. He's like, that's not. And then he's like, these ceilings are lower. And the face that Carol makes as if they lower the ceilings between when he saw the place and closed. It's so funny.
Where are all the hot people?
Yes.
I was promised. Yeah.
And yeah, he's in it for the long term there for sure.
I think this episode is just so well balanced. It's early in the run. So we get so many good firsts, so many important moments. We get the tour of the office. I think this is such an important episode early on. It feels very pure as far as office essence.
Oh, you know? Very.
Yeah, definitely.
And then he sells this house later on eBay.
For 80% of what he paid.
Molded
the buyer was
time.
Very motivated.
Just a couple other moments from the show that we didn't really mention. Cold open.
Yeah.
Michael has Ryan bring him a egg McMuffin sandwich, and clearly wants Ryan to recreate scenes from Risky Business where
pants
he's
off,
take,
run around.
Take yeah. your pants off, run around.
Whatever you got to do.
And then for the longest time, my favorite quote from The Office was, Michael is like Mozart, and I'm like Mozart's friend. No, I'm like Butch Cassidy, and Michael is like Mozart. You mess with Mozart, you're going to get a bullet in the head, courtesy of Butch Cassidy. One of my favorites.
That is a great cold open, and it's, you know, I am a night owl and also a bit of an early bird, so I'm very wise, and I have worms. I was watching this cold open, and I had a thought that's not necessarily related to this episode, but thinking about the fact that this episode first came out, and I think you said 2005, right, Sean?
Mm-hmm. Or yes,
2004?
Sir.
Yeah. Yep. And thinking that maybe part of the reason that The Office feels so timeless compared to some of the other shows that were out around this time is because all of the characters are wearing like business attire. They're wearing right. suits or at least like a jacket and tie and a coat. And maybe that's part of the reason that it still has that same appeal of relevance, is because the characters still look like they could be dressed like that today, you know?
Definitely.
You wouldn't look at the characters in the way they're dressed and think that looks old or dated. Just an idea that I had. Does that make sense?
True.
What do you guys
yeah,
think?
No, that's a good point. I wonder when it will feel dated, because you're absolutely right. These are all very normal clothes. You could walk into a paper company today and mm-hmm. people would be dressed like this, I assume.
Are there still paper companies? There must be.
No.
Paper supply companies?
I'm sure, yeah.
If you work at a paper supply company, write into the show. Let us know.
We order paper from Kelly Paper right here in Portland,
hey,
Oregon.
All right.
All the time. So over on Hawthorne.
Our new
and
sponsor.
You just said no, there are no paper companies.
It was a joke.
Guys, do you see, maybe they'll sponsor our show? Kelly
yeah.
Paper?
Yeah. Hey, that's a great idea.
You get a discount code when you order paper if you listen to this show. Enter MSPC at checkout.
Any other thoughts? On
yeah, shout out to the Schrutes paying off that 15-year early on the beef
oh,
farm.
Yeah.
Good for them. 60 mm-hmm. acres. Mm-hmm. The no mention of them running a bed and breakfast out of it yet, but we can assume that's to come. I also agree with Michael that no one likes beets.
I'm with you too. I don't like
beets
either.
I like beets.
Good man.
I like borscht. I like pickled beets.
Yeah, you love it.
He said wearing a maroon sweatshirt.
Sick man. Yeah, I know. You have a beet colored sweatshirt on.
There's I think this restaurant's closed now, sadly, but there was a restaurant called Trinket on Cesar Chavez in Portland that did a beet Bloody Mary. Mm. So
boy,
good.
That's disgusting.
It's good, man.
Did Jim give himself bronze in the medal ceremony?
Yeah, I believe so.
Dwight got the silver.
Dwight's number two. Yeah. Yeah.
Weird move, Jim. Weird. We didn't see him just compete in anything, but
yeah.
I guess mm-hmm. he still got a medal.
I feel like bronze should have gone to Phyllis.
Yeah, I'd be pissed if I was Phyllis.
At least we saw, like, we see Phyllis win something. We see Kevin win one of the competitions.
Yeah, Phyllis also is in the the horse competition. Mm-hmm. You calling me a hoe? Oh, is that trash talk from Phyllis?
Ryan wins something where they're guessing about like who had someone from Vance Refrigeration.
Oh yeah, from the elevator.
From the elevator. And we see, and then we don't get any resolution in the Oscar Toby coffee race.
That's true. It
just ends.
Although Oscar seems to spill coffee, so I feel like he might have been disqualified.
I hope they measured the amount of liquid at the end of the race, is my guess, is how they determine the winner there. Very, very Survivor-esque competition.
I was just going to say, we've been rewatching old seasons of Survivor.
The most liquid at the end of this wins. Yeah.
It's hard not to think of Dwight in AARM. Come on, the boss needs his coffee, with the hot coffee, and he's just running through the chairs and spilling all over himself.
This coffee is very cold.
Well, great episode.
Good job, guys. Good work, everybody. It's time to move on to conference room.
This is the segment where we self-congratulate ourselves on a job well done.
Yay. Conference room. Get in there.
Right now. Conference room. Topic. Potpourri. Let's go.
Okay, so for this week's conference room, we're going to take a look at the John Krasinski hosted SNL a couple weeks ago. We're a little late to the party on this, based on the cadence of our recording, but I did want to mention this moment with John Krasinski and the Office theme. You guys have, and we wanted to talk about it in this episode because neither of you guys have seen this, correct?
No.
Yeah, no.
Okay, so the premise of this sketch is characters singing their own theme songs. So why don't you play it, Alex, and we'll see what you guys think.
John Krasinski sings the long-lost lyrics to the original Office theme song, which he wrote himself.
Scranton, 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 Scranton. That where we all live and work, that's a calculator. There's Dwight, he's the bad guy.
Nice. Very nice.
Excellent. That's hilarious.
Scranton. Scranton, Scranton, Scranton.
Scranton, Scranton, Scranton.
I imagine this comes out, a lot of our listeners will have heard that, but I wanted to get your guys' reactions to it.
That's awesome.
Well,
of course,
we know that John Krasinski filmed those shots when he's driving into Scranton.
Himself,
And maybe that's what he was singing to himself in that video, in the actual footage. Maybe that's the audio, is him going, Scranton. that's good. That whole
I'm sure
I watched the rest of that sketch up to that point. Really good stuff. Really good stuff in there.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm sure other people have made up lyrics to go with the Office theme song as well.
Oh,
just at home. I wonder if you have, send them in.
We're gonna get a dozen emails just from that prompt, Edwin, of people.
I hope we do.
Yeah, we had
that would be awesome.
Someone else followed up with the person who did the Hans Zimmer version of the Office theme.
Aaron.
Yeah.
Friend of the pod.
Yeah, of like, hey, I need to get in touch with this person. So gigs are getting done through with Michael Scott fans.
Maybe is that a different thing? Because I just responded. I just put him in touch today with a lady who wants to play it at her wedding.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I just emailed them together to just say, okay, you guys got to talk. That's so funny.
Yes.
And I hope to hear more about that because I think she's going to have people playing the theme song when they walk down. Oh my gosh. I'm so excited. I hope we hear more about that. More about that wedding from Ashlyn. Congratulations, Ashlyn.
Yeah.
And then for our well actually corner, where people can send us corrections, we welcome it. In our Meredith episode, my son says a message and says that in re-listening to our Meredith episode, the trivia question about the comic book that Pam writes for Jim, we said it was called Bear Man. It's actually called The Adventures of Jimmy Halpert.
Huh.
Just want to correct that.
Set the record straight.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you already know what you want to hear.
It's also a derivative of a little cereal called Bear Man. Well, let's move on to another topic. About Brian Baumgartner. By the time this episode debuts, I think this will have been up for a couple days, but Brian Baumgartner is launching another a follow-up to an oral history of The Office called The Office Deep Dive with Brian Baumgartner, which is, I believe, extended interviews that they use to create an oral history of The Office. So I actually think that the way this will come out, at least from what I've read, is that it will be interviews that he used to create an oral history of The Office. And I think something else that we should mention, this is kind of interesting. Somebody sent us this, but this is true. So I guess Brian Baumgartner did a Reddit AMA about an oral history of The Office, and he mentioned the Andy Green book, and he says, I have not read the book. It was written, you understand, by someone who was not on the inside, and he did not interview the majority of the people who were on or worked on the show. He simply found old interviews and simply interpreted quotes. Baumgartner wrote, every quote he attributed to me was something I said at some point, but not to him, and potentially taken out of context, which is kind of interesting. I know we've talked about the Andy Green book a lot on our show, and I think personally it's still like a valuable resource for Office fans, but I think that's really interesting to think about the oral history of The Office as well, and Baumgartner being very intentional in how he puts his projects together. But yeah, I think it's another interesting dynamic.
More Office content.
Yep,
I'm excited
so much.
I loved Brian's oral history of The Office. That's a great podcast.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, and I'm sure like an extended interview, like think about an extended interview with someone like Steve Carell, you know, who doesn't necessarily talk about The Office all the time. I'm excited for that.
Really looking forward to that. That's going to be great.
Shall we do our new segment?
Yeah, do you want me to run it? Because I mean, I've only got a couple questions here. But
sure. Yeah, let's do it.
Sounds great.
All right, in lieu of trivia this week, we're going to try a new segment called what we're going to call Ordinary Things, which is a couple questions about our lives inspired by the topic of this show. So from Office Olympics,
let's put in a little background noise, just like we do with trivia.
Okay.
There we go. A little office ambience for you boys.
Scranton. Okay. And so here's the first question. Do you have a time where you invented games around the office or around the house?
Yes, at our old house, Sean, we used to live together with some friends, and we invented a game on the back patio called Limball. And we're not going to go, I don't want to go too deep into why it's called that or how. It gets really weird, but basically it was.
It's because.
It's very strange, yeah.
It was played with a soccer ball and then a bunch of Halloween limbs, like an arm and a leg.
It was after we threw a Halloween party, and we had a bunch of leftover decorations laying around, including severed body parts that were for the Halloween party that were just sort of laying around the patio. And then we had a little futsal ball, and the way our patio was constructed, there were three small openings that you could walk through to get in and out of the patio. And we found
it's like a little arena.
You can play one versus one soccer, futsal, basically, where you're just trying to score on one of the other two goals. Also, there's a bunch of just body limbs in the arena that are just distractions that just cause a little extra stuff. But no, we did fold them into the rules. Like if you picked up the hand, you could then use your hand to block the ball, not just your feet. And if you picked up the foot, and if you scored by kicking it through with the foot, you got double points. So we did actually incorporate the limbs. But you're right that it was an arena and people could stand on the brick ledge around the arena and watch it like it was like honestly like you're looking down at a gambling pit yelling at everyone who's playing. It was
I remember
exciting
playing that game at your house. What was the thing that you would say when we start when you start? It was like I declare a limb ball.
It was
ball.
Like one,
do you
two,
remember that?
Yeah, something two. I declare a limb ball. And the person who was the person who was about to play next, like we stood in line and whoever got scored on was out and a new person would then come to defend that goal. Mm-hmm. And whoever was next would throw the ball into the middle along with the limbs to start the game. And so it was always a little random. All this is to say, an absurd, crazy game that was so much fun. And it actually kind of worked up a sweat. Like it was actually a little bit of a workout.
Definitely.
Yeah, that I think that's probably the biggest hit as far as a home-invented, homespun game that we've created. Anything else you guys did?
In that house, we also didn't have internet for 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember we decided one day, or when we first moved in, we were like, this is not going to be like a college house. We should make this house nice. And then the next day I came home and you and Mitch had taken the sleeve to a Star Wars VHS trilogy
and duct taped a beer coaster on the bottom of it, and then taped that to the fridge, and we're throwing bottle caps across the room into it like it was a hoop.
That's 100% accurate. We this was also like one of the first houses we all moved into, like after college, and we were like, okay, like, and we were like, all right, no, let's not smoke weed inside the house so it doesn't just always kind of smell like weed. Let's not decorate with liquor bottles. Let's not do all this sort of stuff. And we did some of that, but in other ways, it was just a college house, but now we're not in college. And that game was part of it. And then
coaster flipping.
I was going to say that was a fun 2 weeks without internet when we moved in.
Yeah.
But we did a thing where we'd line up coasters along the edge of a table, and then you'd try and like hit them up, and you'd flip them and then catch them after they flipped once. And there is a video that Kaz took of me. I got three at once. I put three next to each other. I flipped them all. I caught two in my hands and the third one in my mouth. A perfect flip on my first try. And he got it on video. So I'm gonna find Kaz and see if he has that still. And I'll put that on Twitter.
Every time I went over there was something new going on.
Always something new.
Yeah.
So we did the coaster flipping, we did limb ball.
You had a ping pong table.
Oh, ping pong. Classic.
Yeah.
We invented many variants of ping pong. Counts, 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 two bounce.
Counts,
three
counts,
bounce.
Counts is just the game never ends. Like so
any hit ends and it's
you just whack it into the backyard, you're like, counts, counts, counts. You just have to run and get it and
but it happened until you couldn't hit it back anymore. So it was like it did end, you try and get like 200 volleys in, but anything played, any surface played. Edwin, did you invent any games around your house?
I mean, nothing that would compare to that. I don't feel like I can follow that.
Yeah, it's a lot.
In this episode, Michael closes on his condo. Talk about it. Talk about you guys. Do you guys have any stories closing on your condos in your life?
Yes, I was going to say that for us, closing on this house, my mom was the Dwight in that scenario where I was just constantly getting messages from her about her concerns about the house. One of them, one time, she just sent me a screenshot of like the crimes committed in the area in the last year, which was three. And just that screenshot, no message.
Wow.
And I was just like, oh,
that's kind of ominous.
And then I looked up my apartment and we had like 26 crimes in the last year. And so I screenshotted that and I sent it to her. And then she said, great, now I'm even more worried. And I was just like, what does that mean? We're moving to a safer place. We're fine here and we're moving to a safer place. So that was what I dealt with for, about a month and a half as we were trying to close on the house.
Wow, that's great. I don't have anything quite like that, but when Anna and I closed on this house, it was the week of like March 11th, 13th last year. It was the week that the shutdown happened. And literally from our meeting with our realtor to assemble the paperwork to when we met, we saw the house and then had another meeting to start signing papers when we closed. That was the transition of normal walk into an office, have the meeting, and then by the time we closed on the house, it was like masks, sanitizer. No one knows what's happening. Is the world about to end? There's no bread at the grocery store. Like that was that week. And we're like, what are we doing? Are we buying? Why are we buying this house? And so Anna and I collectively had that moment Michael has of just going like, and wondering what are we doing? And turns out it was a good choice, but we really had a lot of conversations of like, do we back out of this? And it was like, if we do, we lose like $5,000. Just like Michael.
Michael, back out of this now.
So that was just the worst, the craziest week to buy a house was that week.
No kidding. No kidding. I remember that.
I've got a story. It's not like a property closing story, but our friend Colin, when he moved into his apartment, when he moved back to Portland, he bought a couch and he was living in this newer building and there was only one elevator big enough to carry furniture up. And when people would move in, they would book the elevator for a day. So when Colin's couch showed up, he couldn't get into that elevator. The other elevator was too small. The movers from the company didn't help him. They just left the couch in the lobby. So he was just there with a couch in the middle of his lobby. And the people at the front desk were of no help. All of his neighbors were walking by just looking at this guy with a couch in his lobby. And he called us trying to get help. And so I went to help him move the couch, and we had to move the couch up the back stairs of his building. It was like that scene from Friends. Pivot. It was like pivot. That. I was trying to navigate. I think, Sean, you were there.
I was
as
there,
well.
Too. Because I was working at home, and, like, I got two missed calls from Colin, and then the text started coming in that was like, please, somebody come and help me. This is my nightmare.
And it was the kind of thing where when you help someone move, you know, you're not invested in – you know, when you are moving yourself, you're so invested in your things and your property, and this is your whole day that you're committed to. Like, when you come in to help, you don't have the same level of investment. So you can kind of help without being stressed out about it. So, like, when we got there, we were able to help. But, yeah, Holland Cube. That's right.
Yeah.
Perfect analogy. You really should have a Tweeters account. But it was just a funny moment where we had to kind of – Colin was just standing there with a couch in the middle of the lobby. We had to go help him.
You mentioned Colin saying, this is my nightmare. You know how some people say, like, oh, so-and-so is a man of few words? I was like, Colin's a man of many nightmares. Love Colin.
Speaking of Colin, if...
hey!
As he's been known before, I think he's called him before.
Yeah, it was Colin calling. That was the idea.
Colin.
We did that once.
You can call us. You can call us and leave us a message, and we love to play him on the show. Our number is 503-694-9314. You can email us, mspodcastcompany@gmail.com. I'm going to say right now that we are running low on listener-provided trivia, so if you've been thinking about sitting down and making some trivia for us, now's the time to do it. We're on Facebook and Instagram at Michael Scott Podcast Company. We have a website, michaelscottpod.com. And you can join us on patreon.com/Michael Scott. Become a Scott's Tot, $5 a month. You support the show. Together we do a donation to the Thurgood Marshall College Fund. There's an extra episode, bonus mailbag episode for you every month if you're a Patreon subscriber. And we do our very best to answer every single question that we get on Patreon, or if you send us a few, we'll answer at least a couple. So please, if you've listened to all of the episodes that we have for free and you're dying for more, there's more episodes if you join Patreon. So special thanks to all our Patreon supporters, and special thanks to Ryan Lloyd, who helps us with our social media and designs all our artwork. This episode was recorded in Portland, Oregon over video chat.
Thank you as always for listening. We truly appreciate it. And we love interacting with everyone. You all get yogurt lids, but you have to be careful because the gold is also the bronze, which is actually blue. So just keep that in mind. We really truly appreciate it. Thank you. Take care. Stay safe. We'll see you next time.
Pippity Poppy, give me the salad.
Yes, sir.
Wait. Don't skip ahead just yet. I know you were about to. Chances are, if you're listening to this podcast, then you'll love mine too. If you like podcasts that break down all of your favorite water cooler reality TV shows like The Real Housewives or big budget movies like Wakanda Forever, then this is the podcast for you. Subscribe to my podcast, Reality and Comics 2, and listen to episodes like my interview with Robin Dixon of The Real Housewives of Potomac or my interviews with your favorite bombshells from Love Island USA. That's Reality and Comics 2. And I'm Kendrick. See you there.